Good morning, Patriot Pals. I cannot tell you how excited I am today about my guest. I really was not that familiar with his work. I had heard his name from time to time. And then I've been touring and talking about the origins of the UN and the danger we're in of the one world government, one world military, one world religion, one world currency, and the mRNA COVID-19 certification of vaccination identification plans. And I came across Gary Kaa, who has been for 30 years telling everyone that this was the plan and that we need to prepare. And now we're at a point where everything Gary has written and said for 30 years of being called a conspiracy theorist or whatever they can do to stop the message is unfortunately being proven absolutely right. So thank you so much for joining me, Gary. I am so blown away by your work, but also terrified by how spot on you were. And not only that, you have the evidence. A lot of people talk about it, but you actually know it. So can you just tell my audience briefly a little bit about yourself and your journey, and then we'll get into what people need to know to fight back against this evil.
Yeah, thanks, Mel. It's great to be on your program.
Thank you.
And to finally meet you as well. I've heard wonderful things about you and your program. It's been quite a journey for me. What a lot of people don't know is that I am the son of European immigrants. I'm a first generation American. I was born in Ohio a few years after they came over from Europe. My father, at the age of 12, living in Croatia, fled from the communists. They were called the partisans at the time. And they just tried to survive. You know, they ran for their lives, lost everything they had, ended up eventually in the mountains of Austria, where they found, they thought, a place of refuge. The boarding school that my dad was placed in, he thought, I'm sure not learning a lot of math or anything else here, but they were doing a lot of marching. And he discovered they were preparing the 13 to 16 year old boys to ship them on the Eastern Front as cannon fodder for Hitler. And so that night, when my dad found out about that, he jumped out of a two-story window with a friend of his and just ran for his life and hid out in a barn for a period of time. And then not long after that, the war ended. And my mom, on the other hand, she grew up in Germany under Hitler with a father who was quite outspoken against Hitler in the small village that they lived in. So she had her own share of stories that I could go into of what they went through. But you can imagine what I heard growing up, you know, right, when we have family gatherings with cousins and stuff, all these things that they all went through came out and were discussed. And so by the time I was in fifth or sixth grade, I was watching the evening news with my dad. I wasn't a typical 11 or 12 year old because I had an interest in foreign affairs. And I remember becoming a Christian the summer after fifth grade. And that next year in school in Kettering, Ohio, I remember learning about World War II and what took place, and then combining that with what I learned from my parents. I made a commitment to God that if anything were to ever happen in this country, like what happened over there in Europe during the years of Nazi Germany, that I would take a stand, regardless of the cost. And of course, as a kid, you never really think that God's going to take you up on something like that, although it was a genuine, you know, heartfelt prayer. And so now fast forward many years, I'm quite young, in my 20s. But get hired on to be the Europe and Middle East trade specialist for the government of the state of Indiana, being directly under the lieutenant governor of the state. And almost immediately, I was traveling overseas, dealing with our embassies, representing our state government, trying to increase our exports to create more jobs back here in Indiana. And so it was through that job that I met some very interesting people at our embassies, and also some of the international business figures I met, because I dealt specifically in the energy field as we're trying to export coal from Indiana, and also in the medical area, because Indiana is quite a hub for medical companies. And so, again, met some very interesting people, but quickly learned that a significant percentage of the people, especially working in our State Department at the embassies, were in favor of empowering the UN.
Right.
They didn't see anything wrong with global government per se. As I would engage some of these people more and more in conversation, not showing them up front where I was coming from. If you do that, they'll shut
down.
You
lose. I know. Yeah, that's true.
So I'd ask questions and got quite a few answers. And the one thing that these people had in common more times than not that really concerned me the most is that they were not very fond of Bible-believing Christians or conservative Jews. They consistently hated Israel and also the idea of the U.S. being a completely sovereign, independent nation. I mean, you just found out pretty quickly where they stood on that. They thought globalization was the way to go. And of course, coming from my background and what my parents went through, that threw up all kinds of flags. And so over the next couple of years, I was began doing more research into some of these organizations that I learned many of these people belong to, such as the Council on Foreign Relations, right, and the Trilateral, right, Commission, which all of that would be old news now to your listeners and viewers. But back then, this was pretty new. And I remember specifically in Taiwan, where we do not have an embassy, but it was the American Trade Center where my meetings were conducted there. I met a member of the Associated Press who was an American, married a Chinese gal and stayed over there and became a successful businessman. But he was also a member of the Associated Press. And somehow we both discovered that we were conservative patriots. And so he opened up and he said, "What if I told you that just a few hundred people pretty much ran the world?" And I said, "Oh, really? Well, tell me about it." And he said, "What are you doing tomorrow night? Are you free for a while?" And I looked at my itinerary and I was available for a couple of hours. So we met at a restaurant there in the hotel. And he actually brought with him a list of who some of these people were. And it was like a who's who of our media, major foundations, you know, of course, the Rockefeller Foundation, right, and Carnegie Foundation, groups like that. All of them with a one world bent, wanting to promote this one world agenda. And when I did an analysis of that list and then others that I dug up through my own research later on, and this really shook me up. If you take the top five positions in our U.S. government, you know, like the president, secretary of treasury, secretary of defense, national security advisor, and secretary of state, and you look at all the people that have held those positions since World War II, be they Democrat or Republican. At the time I did the research, exactly 80% of all of them belong either to the Council on Foreign Relations or Trilateral Commission or both.
Right. Both. Yeah.
So that explained why things kept going in the direction that they were going in, whether, you know, Democrats or Republicans were in power. And so that was just the beginning of it then. So eventually the door opened up for me to begin sharing about some of the things that I learned. And that continued for about 10 months or so. Then I was called into the office of the Deputy Director of Commerce. And he began asking me questions. He said, "Is it true that you've been speaking out against world government?" And so, you know, the word had gotten back to him. I said, "Yes, during my free time, I have." he said, "Don't you think that this possible trend toward a world government isn't just a natural evolution of the progress of mankind?" And I said, "No." And I took that to be a free opportunity for me to share, you know, and so I did. And he listened for quite a while. And I presented documentation. It was a God thing. It was like I was prepared, even though I had no idea this was going to come. And I was rattling off statistics that I didn't even know I had in my head, you know, and making a case and sharing what I just did with you about my parents and what they went through. And I felt obligated as a U.S. citizen to warn people about this, because if I don't, knowing this information, how can we expect anyone else to do so? You know, if I was in the government learning of these things. So he listened for a time, And then he cut me off. And he said, as long as you work for this administration, you will not talk about any of these things to any groups, regardless of their size, whether they are Christian or non-Christian. Is that understood?
Wow.
Before I could even think of a response, he said, you've been a tremendous asset to our administration, and we do not want to lose you, but the choice is yours. And that's how the meeting ended. And, you know, I couldn't really be fired in a credible way from their standpoint, because I had just received over the previous year and a half or so, three special awards and honors from the governor, the lieutenant governor, and the secretary of state of Indiana for my outstanding service to the state of Indiana. So they would look like fools, you know, if they would now fire me. So I believe it was thought by the powers that be, if they apply enough pressure, I'll back down. And so I went back to my office, stared out the window for a while, called a good friend of mine who worked in the Secretary of State's office, who met me for lunch, and I told him everything that just happened, and he could hardly believe it. And so I decided to take one more trip that was already planned overseas, and use that as a time just to reflect and pray about my decision, because I didn't want to do anything rash. And then when I came back, I submitted my letter of resignation, giving them 3 weeks' notice.
Right.
I just want to share one more thing. I want to get our lieutenant governor off the hook on this. We got along very well. He was a tremendous boss, a great administrator. And I do not believe the decision came down from him. I believe it actually came down from higher up, passing him, because I came to discover that our governor at the time and a few other people in the Republican Party, this was a Republican thing at the time, were pretty staunch globalists. And so I believe they didn't want anybody talking about this stuff. And so again, whether you're Democrat or Republican, they've got people in both parties that push this agenda. Today, I'd say it's about 70-80% in the Democratic Party, but there are still some Republicans out there.
Yeah, I've come to believe myself that the whole, at least since the murder of JFK, I feel like the entire right, left, Democrat, Republican, siding with teams, basically, the whole is to give the American people an illusion that we have a choice over who's going into office. But I firmly believe, especially with this regime, this installed, illegitimate globalist regime, that that's not been the case. It seems to me, especially since H.W. Bush took office, that we've been infiltrated. I say in a lot of my speeches that after all the research I've done, what I see now is maybe Germany lost, but I don't think the Nazis did. And it appears to me when you look at Rockefeller and then especially Kissinger, who we were always told was some kind of good guy. And then everything that happened, I know you write about it, Operation Paperclip, Operation High Jump. To me, what I see now is that we've been deceived greatly from the beginning of the United Nations, from the origins of it. I live in New York City, right down the street from the United Nations. And I feel like all of this evil that has infiltrated our country, that it's the hub there. And that really, that whole thing, this whole that demonic, I think, Luciferian, upside down idea of the United Nations is actually the most dangerous lie we've been told, because now I see that they've opened their NATO base in fully functioning NATO base in Virginia, a military base that has no loyalty to we the people, our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and is actually the military one world government. And it's getting scary to me, because I know, I'm sure you've seen it, and this is a concern of mine, and then I want to get back to other stuff, but I know you'll probably have an opinion. So I've watched over the last, you know, several years, George Soros, who I think is incredibly evil, and his NGOs all over the world pull these color revolutions where they foment the hate on the streets, like Black Lives Matter, Antifa, all this, even down to the school boards. And they cause it all so that we, the people, don't recognize who the real enemy is. And then once they do that, they cause so much friction that they knock out the elected president or leader. They pop in one of their globalist puppets. Next thing you know, the place is in debt slavery. They have all kinds of trafficking. They have a port, all this stuff. They take all their resources and then they move on. I feel like that's where we are in America, that they've pulled this off here. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, their mode of operation for decades has been create a crisis, right, then come in presenting their solution on their terms, which then people will rush to accept, thinking it's the only way out of the situation. And if you think about it, well, let's go back to the late 1800s. Okay. By the 1890s, John D. Rockefeller at one point was already refining over 90% of crude oil in the country. In a matter of 10 to 20 years, it became a monopoly. Congress tried to break it up, only to find out a few years later that all of the new companies had board members loyal to the Rockefellers on all the boards. So there wasn't a shred of competition. Then, of course, we had the establishment of the Federal Reserve System. Right. The same forces were behind that. And they were able to push that through when a lot of conservatives who would have opposed it were gone for Christmas vacation.
Right. It was such a crime. Unbelievable. Yeah,
back in those days, it took weeks to get home in some cases, you know, because you didn't have air travel the way we do today. So it was a calculated move. They kept people behind who would be loyal to their agenda, rammed it through. And when the rest of Congress got back after Christmas vacation, there was some protest, but what was done was done. And then the next step, we saw World War I. And as terrible as it was, and it was awful, it was going to be the war to end all wars. And then what happened after the war? The League of Nations was established. Who was at the forefront? President Woodrow Wilson, being advised by Colonel Edward Mandel House, who was a very staunch, committed globalist and an incredibly evil person. So the irony, though, was the American people saw through what was going on. They did not like this idea of us having to march to the drumbeat of an organization in Geneva, Switzerland, a globalist organization. And so they applied pressure on Congress. Congress voted against it. And so we did not join the League of Nations, even though Woodrow Wilson was the chief global spokesperson on behalf of it. So the next time around with World War II, the globalists were a little smarter. They decided, let's put the equivalent of the League of Nations, the UN,
right,
on American soil. And maybe the American people will go along with it, feeling that we're in control of this. But we should have been tipped off from the beginning when at the founding convention of the UN in San Francisco, dozens of Council on Foreign Relations members were there. The Rockefellers were involved in this in a very central, major way. In fact, they donated the land upon right, which the UN would be built in New York City, and made a lot of money in the process, because all the land around there that they also owned, the value went way up. And so they didn't come out short-ended with that.
Nope.
So now you have the UN established. So the trend here is World War I, followed by the League of Nations, a big step toward world government. But a much bigger step came the second time around, World War II, and then the UN.
Right.
So if we follow that, where's all this going? Could there be a third major global conflict that terrifies people? And then on the heels of that, they offer a global system of government that will bring in permanent, lasting world peace. Well, when you look at what's going on in the Middle East right now, we just handed over Afghanistan. Afghanistan, it's already being dubbed as a terror threat yesterday. I don't know if you saw the news headlines, but we're within 6 months to a year now of a globalist threat from Afghanistan.
Of course. Which,
what a great thing to do, to pull out and leave tens of millions of dollars of weapons for them. I mean, this whole thing is so ridiculous. You know, after a while, I think we have to be fools not to see through what's going on.
Right.
So now you've got terrorist states all the way from Pakistan, right, Afghanistan, Iran, Iraq, Syria, a direct shot to Israel for Iran. They're getting very close to a nuclear right, weapon if they don't already have it. So the stage is set for some type of major coming Middle East conflict, which could happen in the next number of months or next couple of years.
Yep.
Meanwhile, the U.S. is being destabilized intentionally in every way imaginable. And, you know, if I was president and I wanted to take down the U.S. and make it impossible for the U.S. to rise again, I would be doing everything exactly right. What Biden's been doing.
Exactly.
And the fact that 30 to 40% of Americans still back him, you know, at least it's not a majority at this point, but still 30 to 40% of people are going along with what he's doing. That shows us where we're at as a country. I mean, I think there are far more socialists in this country, whether they themselves even realize it or not, right. than what we imagined up until a year and a half or 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's absolutely terrifying. But you know, that the crazy part is, and you've been talking about this for years, I now look back and I see the infiltration into our K through 12 and our universities. And you talked about, I talk a lot about also World War II and watching from all the way up to the virus, but watching from the 30s to when concentration camps were actually functioning. And it's so similar to every step. When Biden went in there and did those executive orders, like one, they were just Marxism, communism, socialism, 101. And I'm looking at people, I get so much mail, I'm sure you do too, from Americans who came from communist countries, proudly followed, became legal citizens in America. And to me, they're the most outraged, but it really was the infiltration, in my opinion, of the education system and the universities, but also like you said before about the Fed. And I actually did speak once to Edward G. Griffin, who wrote The Creature of Jekyll Island, which is similar to like a lot of stuff that you've talked about in the past, where it's people don't even know that about the debt slavery. People don't know the Fed is a private bank. And honestly, what I see right now, yes, the Middle East, but I'm watching them with this climate emergency and this this summit. And I see what they're doing, in my opinion, is it's the exact same thing with the Fed. They're offering all the same countries they've had in debt slavery money for a faux carbon-based climate crisis caused by us, of course, because then all the atheists and the anti-God people and all these children with this Greta that have no God whatsoever and are willing to kill humans to save a planet that they are totally confused about. But now we have them offering $150 trillion to all the same countries that they've enslaved in the Fed debt, Rothschild banking slavery, with loans to fight climate change that we will never pay off, thus ensuring that they will have another 100 years of debt slavery. And people are buying the whole climate thing too. And it's nonsensical. None of the data makes any sense. Yeah. And so what are you seeing with that? I'm scared of the climate people. They're really, they're crazy.
Yeah, they're moving forward on several fronts. One of them is purely economic with the new system that they're going to thrust on us, that they're trying to use the COVID crisis to get us, you know, the great reset moving in that direction. The other thing though, is the whole climate change aspect. I don't know if you had a chance to read all of my first book, En Route to Global Occupation, for people.
Yeah, that's the one that I read, and you were already talking about it.
In the back of that book, I reproduced documents. This was from the 1980s, of an organization that was involved at that time at the forefront of laying the groundwork for ultimate global government. And at the time, the leaders of a few hundred different organizations belonged to that organization. Including some of the leaders of Greenpeace and all kinds of pretty prominent organizations. That being said, they had already at that time drafted a prototype copy of a world constitution. And they also put out a list of 49 reasons for why we need a world government. Now, this was not public knowledge at the time. It wasn't public knowledge until my book came out and exposed all that back in 92. But they put out a list of 49 reasons for why we need world government. And something like a third of them had to do with climate change, the environment, ecology. They even used the term global warming in their meetings, global warming and climate change. This was at least, this was in the mid 80s. And the term global warming and then later on climate change, we didn't really become familiar with those until after the Rio de Janeiro Earth Summit in the early 90s.
Exactly.
So I found out about this years before it ever went public and knew that this would be a big part of their agenda. And in fact, the 15 or so reasons they gave involving climate change was the number one reason. Right. The second was world peace. We have to have global government to ensure world peace, to stop wars, you know, so you have one government, one military over the entire world, then the argument is nations would no longer be able to fight each other. A third reason was the global economy, which they said was going to crash. And so we needed a new global economic system.
Hello, and Great Reset.
Here we go, Great Reset. And so we see this again, every problem that can be created and the fires fueled to make it so huge that it seems like there's no way out of this. That's what globalists want. Then they can use all of these crises as a reason for global government. And so again, there's an economic side, there's the climate change side, there's the world peace side of it, the political end of it, and also world hunger. They threw that in as kind of a fourth big reason.
As if it's not them creating all the crisis and paying for all the wars and everything else. And like you said, then they come in as the solution, which now we're dealing with on many levels. One of the other, it's interesting you said that, I'm sure you know about it, but they had that meeting at Rockefeller Institute, I think sponsored by Rockefeller Institute, but it was the Good Club. And it was Bill Gates and Bloomberg and Soros and I think Bezos was there, Branson. And they discussed all of the same stuff. The Wall Street Journal wrote about it. It was very hush hush, but it was all the same players that are involved in COVID, basically. Yeah. Oprah was there, you know, Oprah, which is a total psyop. And what they talked about was using a virus and climate change to get the one world government back then. And nobody was putting it together except for you and two other guys, you know. And then the other thing that you said just now, because you brought up the 90s, I saw a piece with David Rockefeller in an interview saying that his goal was to microchip and have full surveillance on all of humanity. Like, these people think that they're God. There is no God. They play God. So getting onto this, because you wrote, I just read a great article you wrote this morning about, because I follow Archbishop Vigano as well. And he's been a true voice and a hero, I think, for anyone. And then I saw the Pope and traditional Latin mass. Like, he's like, it's not up to him. And this Pope, I call him the faux Pope, by the way. But then I see, you know, you wrote quite a bit about COVID and Klaus Schwab, a demon at the top in Switzerland. You know, it's funny. We grew up in America being taught that Switzerland was neutral somehow. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's exactly the opposite. These Luciferians are it's unbelievable. But so Klaus Schwab wrote a book called COVID-19, The Great Reset, because these people apparently have to tell us what they're going to do so that we willingly, with our free will, enter into their plan. So you wrote a really amazing piece, and I'm going to put all your links below, about COVID-19 and the real goal, which I believe is full total surveillance and control over humanity through the guise of track and trace. But where are you on the COVID thing right now?
Well, since you brought up Archbishop Vigano, I quote him on a couple of things here.
Yeah.
I had this love that guy. Article, which we publish a quarterly news journal, about 20 pages, fully documented, and people can subscribe to that at our website, garycaw.org. So we did post this, but just a couple of quotes. This was in a letter he wrote, an open letter to President Trump on October 25th of last year, just a few days before the election.
Yeah, I remember when I first saw it. It went right when it came out, Bannon put it up. And then I downloaded it and I was like, where this guy had this is it. And I thought people would see it and realize. And here we are. But
he says a global plan called the Great Reset is underway. And I need to explain, he has been in the Vatican as a Vatican insider through the last four popes at a high level. He's probably close to 80 years old.
Right.
He probably figures he has nothing to lose if his life is threatened at this point. And so he's really putting himself on the line to warn people. He says, behind the world leaders who are the accomplices and executors of this infernal project, there are unscrupulous characters who finance the World Economic Forum, very key organization in all of this, and Event 201, promoting their agenda. The purpose of the Great Reset is the imposition of a health dictatorship hidden behind tempting promises of ensuring a universal income and canceling individual debt. The price of these concessions from the International Monetary Fund will be the renunciation of private property and adherence to a program of vaccination against COVID-19 and COVID-21 promoted by Bill Gates with the collaboration of the main pharmaceutical groups. Beyond the enormous economic interests that motivate the promoters of the Great Reset, the imposition of the vaccination will be accompanied by the requirement of a health passport and a digital ID, with the consequent contact tracing of the population of the entire world.
Right.
Those who do not accept these measures will be confined in detention camps or placed under house arrest, and all their assets will be confiscated. And then he goes further, but that's the gist of it. In other words, they're putting a carrot out there. You either go along with us, and if you do, fine. But if you don't, there are going to be consequences. And he's warning us about this.
Right.
He also specifies the current Pope, Pope Francis, as being involved in all of this up to his ears, and really calls him out on it. And
And he's written and spoken out multiple times since. I saw that letter to Donald Trump, and I think Donald Trump gets it and knows that what's going on. And it was a big risk for him to step in, because I believe Agenda 21 under Hillary Clinton would have happened. Agenda 2030 is the end goal. It's the one world government. But I live near the UN, and they have like big murals outside of the UN that make it look so great. You know, if you don't get it, another thing that I tell people a lot, because I actually went and made sure it was true, is about the loosest trust at the UN being the foundation of the United Nations. It's really the Lucifer Trust by Alice Bailey and the 10 rules to the one world government. That's the philosophical underpinning, like the other Robert Mueller, UNESCO one world education. And if you look at these things, I always say the only thing not welcomed at the UN is God. They are 100%. They cannot, in my opinion, achieve their Great Reset if there's too many people that still believe in God. So jumping from that to the vaccine stuff.
Right.
You and I are both real. We really believe in God, and that God will win this war. You have a whole organization about that and hope, and that's
hope for the world.
Hope for the world.
That's our organization.
That's the only way out of this. But as far as these vaccines, why are people so brainwashed? I don't understand.
Well, they've controlled the media on this from the top down. So when you're drinking this in day after day, coming in through the media, then you've got all kinds of medical associations that have been respected over the years that are promoting this, from the CDC to the, you know, to Dr. Fauci's organization, National Institute of Health, the World Health Organization. By the way, Tedros Ghebreyesus, who's the head of the World Health Organization, he was a socialist revolutionary leader in Ethiopia and was rewarded by becoming the director of the World Health Organization. I mean, some of this stuff is almost unbelievable until you do the research and you come to understand fully where these people are coming from. And then here, I don't know if you've heard this organization, the Council for Inclusive Capitalism. Have you heard of
that? Oh, yes, I have. They had an event. At the Vatican, led by Linda Rothschild, right?
Correct.
That is
such
a farce.
I want to talk to the Vatican more with this. People do not realize how heavily this current Pope is involved in all of this. And also, he has set himself up to be the chief educator in the world on behalf of conditioning the world. He says people aren't as ready as they need to be for this coming New World Order, so we need to educate them further. So he has launched this global compact on education that he is the leader of. And along with that, he has launched the Council for Inclusive Capitalism. And overseeing this council is even a smaller group called the Guardians for Inclusive Capitalism. Now, I want to name just a few of these people so people realize this is not a fluke. These are actual powerful people belonging to this organization created by the Pope. And they put out a press release December 8th of 2020. We put this in our winter issue, front and center. Okay, the people involved as guardians of this council include the president and CEO of MasterCard, the executive chairman of DuPont, the chairman and CEO of Merck, chairman and CEO of Johnson & Johnson.
Oh my God.
Chairman and CEO of Visa, the treasurer of the state of California, Fiona May. I thought that was an interesting one.
Yes.
Also, the chairman and CEO of Bank of America, the president of the Rockefeller Foundation, president of the Ford Foundation, and about 20 other powerful figures.
And the Rothschilds. Yeah.
The Rothschilds.
You're always going to find them somewhere in it. Yeah. This is insane because you and I both talk about it. You've really laid it out in your books. This is a very small group of people, and they're always involved. The same exact people. Always. And there's
the people pushing and funding the vaccine, which Bill Gates put $10 billion toward it in 2010 and announced to the World Health Organization, this is going to be the decade of vaccines. And he has seen to it that it is. But he is also funding the technology side of the vaccine. In other words, how to get this into people through various delivery systems. And he's also involved on the economic side of all of this. And there are other people, not just Gates, but he's one of the key ones. And so you ask me where all this is going. And, you know, with the short time that we have, I've got so much documentation all around it.
It's okay. Hopefully you'll come back because I could talk about this for days. But you know what, though? We're at a point. This is what I say when I speak now. We're at a point where if people don't realize who the enemy is and keep fighting amongst themselves by design, we're going to not... Losing America means the whole world loses. It is our Constitution and our Bill of Rights that is holding them back from what they really wanted at all. Yeah. And that's really where I say, enough's enough. If people aren't waking up and don't get it, they're going to be left behind because we're at serious peril right here. And it still seems, especially look at what they're doing to our border. They're trying to have our sovereignty impossible to keep. And it's really, no, go ahead. You need solutions.
Yeah, I wrote in my recent article, I said, if people don't get it now, they deserve to be deceived.
I mean, me too.
Everything's being telegraphed. I mean, you have to be really incredibly unwise and foolish not to see what is going on at this point. But to bring it all together, where this is headed, there was an article I came across last summer, and it's called Testing Will Begin in Africa for Biometric ID, Vaccine Records, and Payment Systems. It shows how they want to combine all this into one. And just a couple of, again, quotes here, because I want to document this. Testing will soon begin. Remember, this happened July of 2020. So this was like 15 months ago. So a lot has happened since, but it said testing will soon begin in poverty-stricken parts of Africa for a biometric ID, which will also be your payment system and vaccine record. The biometric digital identity platform is backed by none other than the Bill Gates-backed Gavi Vaccine Alliance. Gavi, by the way, stands for the Global Alliance of Vaccines and Immunizations, as well as MasterCard and the AI-powered identity authentication company called Trust Stamp. So remember those three names, Gavi, MasterCard, and Trust Stamp. One represents the vaccine, one represents the economic side of things, and the other one represents the technology aspect of it, Trust Stamp. Then going on here, it says MasterCard, in addition to professing its commitment to promoting centralized record keeping of childhood immunization, also describes itself as a leader toward a world beyond cash. That's an actual, the name of a program, World Beyond Cash. And its partnership with Gavi marks a novel approach towards linking a biometric digital identity system, vaccination records, and a payment system into a single cohesive platform. The effort, since its launch nearly 2 years ago, has been funded via $3.8 million in Gavi donor funds, in addition to a matched donation of the same amount by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Yeah. Now, I failed to mention that Gavi was launched with a $750 million grant from the Gates Foundation. So that's basically a Gates organization as well. Right.
Well, that's how he does it. Everything that he does is connected. And it looks like he's being a philanthropist, but he's that he's involved in the next rung and then the next rung, because also World Economic Forum, I mean, World Health Organization is basically being financed and controlled by him too. Now, something else a lot of people don't pay attention to, first of all, he's behind Common Core, which I think is how they dumbed down so many people over the last 20 years. It took away all teaching of logic and reason and history, as far as I'm concerned. But then Bill Gates in a TED Talk said that if he does a good enough job with the vaccines, he can eliminate 10 to 15% of the population. So that doesn't make any sense. Why would somebody have a vaccine to stop an illness, a virus that they created, and then at the same time be saying they want to depopulate?
Yeah. He made that statement, I believe, in 2015. Also, his father was a major contributor to Planned Parenthood. So there's a Gates family history of being involved in eugenics. And now this guy is the one funding more than anyone else this vaccine. You've got to be kidding. I mean, that fact alone should stop people from taking the vaccine. The fact that we have a eugenicist involved in funding this vaccine, that would explain a lot of things. We've had friends who have died. One who's seriously ill right now, who took both jabs and a booster shot and still got the virus. He's up in the Seattle area and he's very ill right now.
Right. Vaccines.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and in Israel, 95% of all new severe cases of COVID requiring hospitalization are among people who've been vaccinated. Yeah. And so I believe as time goes by, we'll be able to make a good case that one of the purposes of this vaccine is to depopulate the planet. I mean, Gates basically came out and said it a few years back.
Right.
In addition to that, though, I believe they're putting in us a platform to build upon. And again, I documented this in my article. I took a page from the website of Moderna, where they refer to this as an operating system. And they compare it to an app or a computer system that is being placed in us that can then be built upon.
Right.
So again, that's a second reason not to take it. But a third reason is there are therapeutics that work.
Right.
Hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, and the monoclonal antibody that works. And so why a vaccine when we have these things that are being suppressed intentionally in order to promote this narrative that we have to have a vaccine and that is the only way out of it. And also, Mel, when you look at how draconian all of this is, that should throw up a flag too. This is unprecedented. That they're mandating this, people are losing their jobs over it and everything else. It's clearly demonic.
Well, you know, I live in New York City. I'm on the road right now, but I live in New York City. It is full on segregation. You cannot go into restaurants, bars, retail stores, public environments, period, without not just your vaccine. You need to show your QR code. And when I dug into the QR code and I looked at the Excelsior Pass, you dig down far enough, you're going to find that it's funded by the World Economic Forum, Bill Gates, Gates Foundation. That one has, one of the bigger banks involved, which we all know are all owned by the same people. But all of it is the same. And the other thing you're talking about, which is really interesting, I was with Dr. Northrup last night, but I was with a bunch of scientists last weekend, really fighting for their, you know, they've all been destroyed. And I was like, but what you're saying about what's in the vaccine. Now, Jeffrey Epstein was funding with Bill Gates a lot of this nanotechnology research. And one of the guys got arrested, Lieber, Professor Lieber from Harvard, who was working both with Harvard and with the Wuhan lab, which is why he got arrested, because he was not declaring that he was being paid by the Wuhan lab. But and then Soros and the Clinton Global Initiative, they're all involved in all of this. And because Epstein, we know, started the Clinton Foundation and Clinton Global Initiative with him, a big transhumanist. And the fourth industrial revolution is Klaus Schwab's after cyber polygon tabletop exercise to take down our grid and our supply chain and everything. The next thing is their fourth industrial revolution / transhumanism. I think that is the most terrifying of them all. And a scientist that I saw speak said that when you look at under the microscope, these vaccines, there's something in there that seems to attack cells.
Can you hear me, Mel?
And then they attach. And then attach. It's like it is an app. Something's in there that's very scary.
Yeah, I just got a message saying our internet connection all of a sudden is unstable. And for about 15 seconds, you were gone. So who knows what's going on out there?
I'm being watched, that's for sure.
That happens regularly, it seems like, when I do programs on this. So the bottom line is you have a fairly small group of people who are commandeering this. They want to take us into a system of global government with a cashless global medium of exchange that everyone will have to use to be able to buy or sell or do anything. That's just around the corner. That's ultimately what the Great Reset is all about. And they want to use this vaccine and the lockdowns associated with it to try to slow down our economy enough that they can introduce this new system. I can't tell you specifically when it's going to happen, but it looks like it'll be within the next year or two if things keep moving forward like this. So it's a massive deception. And you're right. You mentioned earlier on, you go all the way back to Alice Bailey, you know, in 1921, 1922, founded Lucifer Publishing Company, which I document in my book, The New World Religion. I actually found a title page from one of her earliest books that actually says Lucifer Publishing Company, 135 wow. Broadway, New York City in it. And then she changed the name 2 years later to Lucis Trust.
And it still exists at the United Nations to this day as their meditation room. So they can't even deny it. Now, just to jump, because I know we're both really people of faith that believe the only way out of this is God. There's also concern, and I know you brought it up in your most recent article, which I'm going to put links. Everyone needs to really start following you, reading your older books, because they're more relevant now than when you wrote them. And also your newsletter is fabulous. But there is something to this. People don't want to go there. You wrote a book about it. But I spent 15 years in Hollywood, and I saw covert Satanism that included a lot of child abuse and pedophilia and just all this stuff that people don't realize is connected to Satanism. Go from covert to overt. Well, now I see it everywhere, and it being accepted by these people, even Nancy Pelosi, like hugging the Pope and all of that, and all of this going on. Now there's some thought that these vaccines also, I know you brought up that video on YouTube that I also saw about the God gene, removing the God gene with these vaccines and stuff. That is not made up. That was out there. I think the guy was CIA. I don't know. But it disappeared. But there's something to this. A lot of people that are, I travel with a lot of really great Christians and pastors and people out there that are being demonized in the worst way. They couldn't be there's no nicer people than these people that are really just trying to save humanity. But there is something to it because, like I said, they can't control us if we still believe in God. And I see a real push to not only demonize Christianity and Catholicism and real Judaism, not the hijacked kind. You know, people always said, Jews run Hollywood. And I would say, no, every Jew I know in Hollywood, if you ask them, says they're an atheist. So that's not, if you believe in the Torah and all of that, and you read right. and you believe in God, then you're a Jew. If you're an atheist, you're just a Jew by name. But that's a whole nother story. But here's the thing. There's a war on God. I really think that at the end of the day, this is at the very, very top, it would be at Hollywood, politics, the globalists, whatever. There is a satanic element to this that hates God and hates us as God's creation and has no respect for life. And then you put in the globe, like what they've done to the children that are all climate, like Hitler's youth of the climate change. They don't have any respect for other humans. So there's a war on God. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because you wrote a whole book about the one world religion, which I think is terrifying.
Yeah. Well, when you consider the fact that many of these people promoting the global agenda are transhumanists as well, if you don't believe in God, then what's wrong with tampering with human DNA and turning us into something else that might be better, as they think? You know, they don't have any moral conscience barrier there to stop them from doing that. If you don't believe in God, then anything's doable, anything's possible, you know. And so they're rationalizing what they are doing, convinced that somehow they're going to make humanity better through all of this. those of us who don't die from the vaccine, that is, then the rest of us can take a quantum leap together into a higher level of existence. I mean, that's basically what they believe. Right. And so it is demonic. And, you know, in Matthew chapter 24, Jesus warned that things would become so deceptive in the end times that even the elect would be deceived if that were possible. And I think we're there. I mean, I'm amazed at how many Christians who I know of, who I'm pretty close to, ran out and got the vaccine almost without questioning. And I'm thinking, what are you doing? You know, and now some of them are suffering the consequences. They're having all kinds of problems and issues. So it's a time for discernment more than ever before, a time for people to really get into the word and read the Bible and understand it and take the warnings seriously, because they were written for such a time as this. Right. And you have all these, you know, many all millennialists and people that they say all these Bible prophecies, they were all fulfilled in the distant past. You know, they allegorize everything away. So now at the very time when we most need to heed these warnings, people aren't doing so. And they're missing it. And people
poo-poo you when you bring up the mark of the beast. But if you actually read it, I've gone back and I read the entire Bible from cover to cover again. But when you go back and you read that part about that, it lines up to me. And 2 weeks ago, there was a symposium, transhumanism symposium in Spain. And a former Google executive gave a speech saying that their goal, honestly, was to replace God with a benevolent AI. Like, this came out of this man's mouth. And yeah. I'm sitting there thinking, A, why is it up to you? And what is going on here? But then also, then that's the end. To me, that's the end.
Yeah. If human DNA is changed, then we're no longer humans, you know? And so when, as a Christian who believes that Christ paid the penalty for our sins. He paid the penalty for the sins of humans, not something else. So, I mean, it changes everything. And could it be that that is why the Bible is so adamant, why God is so adamant in people not taking the mark? And so in my article, I wrote and held out the possibility, is this thing putting into us a platform through which they can then alter our DNA and make us something different? And this taking us in the direction of the mark of the beast, which we should absolutely not take. Right. But again, why is the Bible so adamant about it? It seems like it would have to be about more than just buying or selling, that it actually changes the essence of our very being and thereby would affect our eternity. And so there's no way I'm taking this thing. I mean, you can't, there is no way. I hope that the word continues to go out and that enough people, and I think, you know, when you have 5,500 healthcare workers walk off the job in New York City rather than take this thing, that should send a signal to other people around the country, because many of them were doctors. Right. It wasn't just nurses. Many doctors are saying, no way, I'm taking this.
Right. That's the problem, too, is the media is complicit. If they're not blackmailed and they're not, you know, Jeffrey Epstein has 10,000 hours of blackmail, really bad stuff. That was really his job, was he was the biggest blackmailer for a book. Well, all three, the Mossad, the former Saudi prince, and the CIA. And he has tons of blackmail on these people, which somebody has and is holding back, that could have stopped a lot of this. Because if people saw what these people do on these islands and all, I think that there would be a lot of outrage, but they're hiding it. But on top of that, we have this thing now where the media, I believe, are almost as complicit in the crimes against humanity as Fauci and all of these people. And I believe in Nuremberg, the media, some media and doctors and nurses did pay the price. And I believe that they should again. You wrote about in a great article that I'm going to put below, hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin being blocked from the public, because my parents also got a prescription and were denied it at CVS. And I think that that's one of the biggest crimes against humanity in this entire last 2 years. Yeah. It just seems to me that there's no explanation other than either profit or mass genocide that they blocked those drugs and still are blocking them. And many doctors out there block them. And, you know, people always say to me, well, why would doctors or nurses or, you know, now the CDC says within 14 days, if somebody dies or has side effects, that they're supposed to put down unvaccinated, which what? But on top of that, why are doctors, nurses, government, Fauci, why would they lie? And I always say, well, 6 million people might have died in the Holocaust, but at least 1 million people worked at the camps. You know, it's not it's not unprecedented that there's pure evil that lurks among us. And they don't even like the banality of evil concept. They don't even think they're committing evil. But all these doctors, nurses, media, they should all be held accountable.
Yeah, Dr. Harvey Risch has come out in favor of hydroxychloroquine. He said we could have this pandemic over and done in a matter of weeks if people took hydroxychloroquine. He's a very reputable epidemiologist from Yale University. And he said, I quote him in my article, he says, quote, physicians who have been using these medications in the face of widespread skepticism have been truly heroic. They have done what the science shows is best for their patients, often at great personal risk. And I ask, why at great personal risk? You know, they're saving lives. So obviously those on the other side of this, their goal isn't to save lives. It's to get this vaccine in us because they could easily save lives by prescribing hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin. He goes on to say, I myself know of two doctors who have saved the lives of hundreds of patients with these medications, but are now fighting state medical boards to save their licenses and reputations. I mean, this is raw evil being perpetrated upon the people of America and the world by Dr. Fauci and by those around him and those helping to fund this whole thing like Bill Gates. And, you know, after Nazi Germany, you're right, you had the Nuremberg trials and a lot of people were put to death. Others were sentenced to long terms in prison. And I don't know if that's going to happen again because of how far evil has progressed this time around, and that this is global and it's coming down from the UN, from the Vatican, from the Pope. You've got powerful players at the highest levels involved in it this time. So there's no guarantee, is what I'm saying, that we as Christians are going to be able to indefinitely fight this thing off. So I tell people we've got to take a stand. It's the right thing to do. Hopefully, as a result, God will give us more time. And that's my hope and prayer. But if not, you and I, we all have to be prepared to put ourselves on the line. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen to us ultimately as a result of this. Just real quickly, we were down in Costa Rica a few years ago. And through a friend, I met a gentleman who had been in a high position in the Department of Homeland Security. And he was down there visiting in Costa Rica. So I asked him, I said, what brings you down here? Why are you here? And he shared that he was aware of some things that were being planned at a very high level. He was aware of the existence of re-education centers. That was the official name that he saw was being called, basically camps, concentration camps. And he said that he had come to Costa Rica to find a house big enough that he and his entire family could move down there because he was getting ready to leave his position. This was a person, not some type of egghead, very level-headed, responsible, well-spoken individual. This was a few years back. Wow. So something is being planned behind the scenes. And I'm not saying everybody in the Department of Homeland Security is bad. I was in a forerunner to that department. The organization I was in, through which I learned many of the things that I'm talking about now, it was eventually brought under Homeland Security once it was formed. So there are some good people in there, but there are also some powerful players who are not on our side.
Yeah.
And if you cross certain lines, they have a way of dealing with people. So we're dealing with some very dark forces. But what I want to drive into people is never forget the fact that our God is more powerful and that he will have the final say. And regardless of what happens to any of us who are speaking out on this thing, in the end, each one of these people is going to have to stand completely naked before a holy God and give an account of their lives. And I don't want to be standing in their shoes to see what happens at that time, unless they repent between now and then.
Well, I think some of that transhumanism and their eternal life, you know, that a lot of the Epstein / Gates research with MIT and them was about eternal life. And I say, well, they better hope there's no hell because the afterlife is not going to be good to these people. But I think a lot of people are waking up. I really do. I've been going around the country. The crowds are growing. You go there because of the media. People think they're that we're the minority. you know, that it's done deal, all this stuff. But then you go and you see, you go to Kentucky, Alabama, Tennessee, and you go to these events and there's 10,000 people that love God and country and are proud of our history and just want some justice and want our country. And this, and the other sad thing, and we'll have to do it again, cause I could talk to you for like 3 days straight probably. But, you know, driving around the country, you see all the abandoned farms, all the abandoned full on steel towns, not just the steel plant, the whole town, the whole, you know, all over America by design. We, the people, need to get back out there, not only show up and stand up and be brave, but also rebuild this country ourselves. Because what's going on, you know, now they're going for the famine and the shortage and all that. The truth is we should never have been getting anything from other countries anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah, our machine tool industry, which is so important because it's the machines that are used to build everything else, right? Over 90% of all of our machine tools are made overseas. Over 90%.
Well, you saw it happen. You were in the government when they were selling us out.
Yeah.
It's amazing because the infrastructure is there. If God comes through and the great awakening that I hope for happens, and we see some justice and some truth and some, you know, revelation on everything, the other side won't be that hard to rebuild if we have the right leadership, but it's getting from here to there, which is why we do what we do, because we still believe. You have an organization. Can you tell people about your organization and where to find you? Because you really are one of the most important voices I've found in my journey. And I really hope everyone follows you and checks you out and especially buys your books.
Well, thank you. Our organization is called Hope for the World. We just try to take a stand to get the truth out there on developments, political, economic, and religious, because they're intertwined. You can't separate those three. And so we've been doing this almost 30 years now. By the grace of God, I've done, I think, over 1,300 talk shows, something like that. So we just get the message out in any way that we can. But really, our main publication that we document everything through, it's called Hope for the World Update. And here's the most recent article that I did. I did post this one at our website. You can go there. It's garycaw.org. My name is spelled G-A-R-Y-K-A-H, garycaw.org. And you can become a subscriber. And that's how we exist as an organization, is through the subscriptions that people get this. And once you have it, feel free to replicate it and just get it out. We just want to get the message out. And you can also get both of my books,
They're amazing.
The Global Occupation and the New World Religion.
Put all the links below. I just want to thank you, Gary. I have never really seen anyone that could put it together in such a way that's, because you can talk about this, but if people can't digest what you're saying, it goes over their head and they just block it out. But you really have a gift for being able to break it down in a way that I think every man, regardless of education level or any of that, can really, really understand it. So not just for for my audience, not just for the people that get what we're saying and are convinced, Gary's work is really good for people that aren't awake and aren't convinced, because it's also your documentation and your credibility that is lacking in a lot of other work that is on this level. But you really, you document everything. You have lots of exhibits. And I encourage anyone that is trying to wake up their family and friends that are hopelessly blind to what's going on to also please share Gary's work and his website. And thank you so much. And I hope you'll come back. I'm really honored. You're a real hero and a real warrior. And you've been so brave and fearless for way longer than almost anyone else. So
praise God. Yeah, glory goes to him. Thank you. Thank you, Mel. Thank you. Keep up the good work. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
God bless you.
Thank you.